fighting for freedom every day. Broadcasting from the heartland of America,
the next generation in conservative talk radio.
This is the Voice of Reason with Andy Hoosier.
Oh, yes, indeed it is. What's up? Welcome into it. So great to have you with us here for a post-Monday celebration. Greatest day of the entire week, my friends. Setting that tone, you see the light almost at the end of the tunnel, but we're not looking towards the end of the week. We are looking towards the here and the now and enjoying the carpe diemisms that we do every single day here on the show. So great to have you. This is the Voice of Reason. I'm Andy Hoosier, broadcasting out of the heart of the nation in Wichita, Kansas, on our flagship radio station. We are all over the country, though, multiple stations and TV, live streaming and podcasting. Welcome aboard your Millennial General, reporting for duty like we do every single day. I am loving the headlines that we're seeing today. It is hysterical. What a world we live in today. I will say that obviously throughout history, we've always had some crazy times, and people probably scratch their head and say, wow, how ridiculous is the other side of the political aisle? But today, my friends, I have to say that I don't think that we've ever seen so much stupid in the world, and the desperation. I say this on the program all the time. We've coined it here on The Voice of Reason, that you might want to cover up your desperation showing just a little bit, especially for the Biden administration, with how bad they're losing in the polls right now, which we'll get to in just a minute. Welcome into it. Stephen Moore will be joining us bottom of the hour. He is the founder of the Ukraine Freedom Project. What is that? And how many Christians are being persecuted in the nation of Ukraine? What does that have to do with the Russian invasion? And what is the role of the United States in that ongoing conflict? Obviously, we're sending a whole bunch more guns and money over there after the passing of the federal or the foreign policy aid bill just a couple weeks ago at the federal level. So we'll talk about all that and more coming up at the bottom of the hour. The polls right now in the political front. Let's get into our what's trending right out of the gate here, shall we?
What's trending today?
Right out of the gate. Let's jump into this heat, hot and heavy. The polls show that Donald Trump is up massively over Joe Biden right now. And it's kind of ironic because right now, obviously, Donald Trump being stuck in court, although there is good news, where apparently the judge has granted him the ability to go see his son's graduation in about a month. So I guess there's some good news there. They also want to hold him in contempt of court for posting on the Truth Social about his court issue with potential jail time as well. So they love making threats to him at the same time. I know. Nonetheless, well, while Donald Trump's predominantly being stuck in court, Joe Biden's on the campaign trail. This is a weird opposite alternate reality that we're seeing from 2020, when we had Joe Biden staying in the basement and not campaigning because of COVID-19. And Donald Trump was out there going to rallies that pulled in 30, 40,000 people in a coliseum. And apparently, Joe Biden won that one. That's what they say, at least. So now we have the opposite now. We have Donald Trump that's being stuck in court, not able to campaign, and Joe Biden going out to rallies that pulls in 20 people, and he's down by like 20 points in the polls and losing every one of the swing states at this point. So right now the Democrats are in panic mode, and they've been for a while, but they're really escalating it. And I can tell you exactly why. My personal opinion, which is what's been since the beginning, is that Joe Biden really set the tone at the beginning by dialing the knob all the way up to 11, coming right out of the gate on January 3rd, and essentially saying that either you vote for authoritarianism and Donald Trump, who's never going to leave office, or you vote for me that's going to keep democracy. And that type of fear and paranoia and hate speech and all this other garbage by accusing the other side of essentially being domestic terrorists and overthrowing this nation, that's a rhetoric that may work temporarily, and you might want to do it like the last month before the election, but that's a high emotion that gets burnt out pretty quickly. So they have nowhere else to go, and they don't have a record necessarily to run on unless they lie through their teeth. So the panic has been stuck. They try to do a big fundraiser. Donald Trump gets a bigger fundraiser. They try to go on the campaign trail. Donald Trump tries to do a campaign trail in between court dates and pulls in bigger crowds. Still, they're losing momentum, and they haven't been able to get anything done purposefully. So that leads us to today, where all hands are on deck for the Democrat Party, where obviously we've had the elites with George Clooney and Hollywood trying to put together this big thing. And did you hear that these Hollywood celebrities might actually show up for this? Okay, cool. Nobody really cares. They don't represent us. They just want the money, and they think that being near celebrities and rubbing shoulders with the cool kids is going to somehow pull them to the victory line, and I don't know if that's necessarily going to work. Then you have all hands on deck with Barack Obama and Nancy Pelosi, and even our very favorite person, Kamala Harris, all on the campaign trail, trying to make those public appearances. Nancy Pelosi being one, showing up on MSNBC, getting angry. And I've never thought I would hear this. Never thought I would hear this. Did you know MSNBC now has hosts that are Trump apologists? Did you know? Did you know that? I didn't know that, but apparently that's what's going on. Is that's what was accused of by Nancy Pelosi while she was on MSNBC talking about job growth under the Biden administration with his 13 million jobs that we know is completely untrue, and Donald Trump having the worst job growth record of any American president.
That created 9 million jobs in his term in office. Donald Trump has the worst record of job loss of any president. So we just have to make sure people know.
That was a global pandemic.
Oh.
He had the worst.
Hold on. Did you hear that pause? Nancy Pelosi. Now, if you watch the video on MSNBC, I highly recommend you do. It's hilarious to watch. Nancy Pelosi goes like glass-eyed. Just, she has that flip. She doesn't know what to say. There was a global pandemic. That's why all the jobs are shut down. That's why he has no job. You know, he was actually doing very well economically, and then the jobs just crashed, and that's what happened. And Nancy Pelosi loses her mind over this one.
Just have to make sure people know.
That was a global pandemic.
He had the worst record of any president. We've had other concerns in our country. If you want to be an apologist for Donald Trump, that may be your role, but it ain't mine. And he has the worst.
I don't think anybody can accuse me of that. Wow, that's Nancy Pelosi getting a little feisty there on the mainstream media talking with MSNBC. How dare you try to accuse Donald Trump of having an excuse for having the worst job records in the history of anybody ever, ever. Which is why they're desperate to try and keep those numbers under wrap. Can't be doing something. Can't we all just get along? Can't we all just get along on the campaign trail, other places? We just want the Democrats to be lovey-dovey and just be just hold us and just be that comforting big government that we all know that we want to have, right? Like, according to the Biden administration, the federal government's supposed to be there just to take care of us, because most of us don't want to have to make decisions for ourselves, so we openly yield ourselves and our rights over to the federal government. Then Kamala Harris on the campaign trail, hanging out with Drew Barrymore, trying to go celebrity style on this one. Not the talk shows, well, not political talk shows, but just going on random talk shows, trying to be the lovey-dovey mama that we all know that she's actually not.
I've been thinking that we really all need a tremendous hug in the world right now. Yeah. But in our country, we need you to be mamala of the country.
Hold on. You heard that right. I'm going to play that again. That was Drew Barrymore talking to Kamala Harris, Vice President of the United States. We want you to be mamala.
I've been thinking that we really all need a tremendous hug in the world right now.
Yeah.
But in our country, we need you to be mamala of the country.
I don't even know what that means. Hey, your desperation show, and you might want to cover up a little bit because this is insane. You got Nancy Pelosi getting angry with the mainstream media for, you know, just actually giving some fact, a little bit of fact, of the fact that we had a global pandemic shutting down jobs. That wasn't his fault. That was, by the way, he was forced to do so by the other side, saying that that's what we had to do. And then Kamala Harris, the least popular vice president in American history, now is mamala of the country. And can't we all just get along and have a big old hug? That's the campaign trail right now, ladies and gentlemen. That's the latest on the campaign trail with What's Trending.
What's going on in this world of mine? There's a whole lot of killing in this world of mine. Somebody's got to help this world of mine.
On the federal front, though, there is still a ploy, at least from the Democrats and from Joe Biden, to try and win over as many voters as possible by moving forward with new policy, according to the DEA, after they've made their announcement. Haptit to BreitbartNews.com and ABC News here on this one is that the U.S. drug control agencies may be reclassifying marijuana, according to sources from the Associated Press, as the U.S. Drug Enforcement Administration, known as the DEA, has now said they're moving to reclassify marijuana as a less dangerous drug, not wanting it to keep it as a class one drug being regulated at the federal level. Now, I want to clarify here that this needs to be done. It's probably needed to be done for a very long time. Unpopular opinion with some, that's okay. But I believe it needs to be done, and people have been advocating for it for a long time. I want to be very clear here. This is nothing new. for the Biden administration. In fact, they've been advocating for this, or the DEA has requested this, for at least a year or so now. Back in October of last year, they really started moving forward with this initiative. So the bigger question is, and I want you to think about this, on why it's being released at this time. Why we're promoting it at this very moment when we are going into May now. We're a month away from the Democrat convention where we solidify the candidates. When the Democrats are down by 20 points in the polls right now in all the swing states, Joe Biden's losing. We have very, very close Senate races across the nation, which we'll get to in just a moment. And we're losing the identity politics groups that the Democrats have held on to for a very long time. On why all of a sudden now they're making this announcement that marijuana might be reclassified from a Schedule 1 drug to a Schedule 3 drug, apparently, where they say they want to move it down and try and make it, quote unquote, less dangerous. It's according to the DEA. And this hat tip to, let's go to this. Let's find, let me see if I can find the right story here, because that one doesn't really give me the best information. Oh, here we go. Yeah, that they want to schedule it from a Schedule 1 to a Schedule 3 that would be in line with ketamine, by saying that it's less addictive and less dangerous than what they originally thought. And the statement from the Biden administration says that they want to do it because, well, there's so many people in jail from marijuana charges that we just need to start loosening up the laws. And with how many states have actually legalized it at the statewide levels, that they need to do something about this. But you know what this really is? At the end of the day, this is nothing more than the desperate attempt to buy off the Democrats, potentially libertarians, and the younger voters. Why? Because younger voters, when they thought was a guaranteed vote for them with student loan write-offs and everything of the sort, that they realize that that's just not the case, with the media coming out and admitting that recently as well.
For the first time in our nation's history, a 30-year-old man or woman isn't doing as well as his or her parents were at 30. That is the social compact breaking down. People aged 30 to 34, 60% of them in 1990 had one child. Now it's 27%. People are opting out of America. They're not optimistic about it. They're not having kids. Young people aren't having sex. They're not meeting. They're not mating. The pool of emotionally and economically viable men shrinks every day, which lessens household formation. So we have a real issue. Young people are enraged. So it turns every cut, every movement into an opportunistic infection because, quite frankly, they are just pissed off.
I mean, there's really, that's a completely solid point. By the way, that again was MSNBC as well. They're starting to come out with facts that they can no longer hold back. The media can no longer try to cover for the Biden administration, especially for an administration, by the way, that according to their own White House documents said that the White House office has had to correct Biden's statements 148 times since January of this year. 148 speeches they've had to recorrect and adjust and make corrections on, and actually try to come out and say, no, that's actually not true, because he's just saying random garbage right now because he has no clue what he's doing. 148 times in what? Four months now? We're at the end of 4 months? Yeah. That's the Biden administration. They're crumbling before our eyes. They're losing voters left and right. So what's their solution? Is to get angry, try to hype up with the celebrities to act really, really cool, and then try to legalize, or not legalize marijuana, but move it from a class one to a Schedule 3 drug that would be in line with narcotics like ketamine, where they would say, yeah, it's bad, but you know, we won't legalize it. It's still not good. But at the same time, it's less addictive than what we originally thought. And understand that there is some medical purposes to this, which we've known for a very long time. Coincidence on the timing? I think not. Lots more coming up here on The Voice of Reason. Stay here.
This is The Voice of Reason with Andy Hoosier. Fighting for freedom every day. This is The Voice of Reason with Andy Hoosier.
Darn right it is. Welcome back into it. 24 minutes past the hour, radio, TV, live streaming, and podcasting. So the bigger question now is, with the push to legalize, or not, again, we have to be very careful. It's not legalizing marijuana. It's going from a Schedule 1 to a Schedule 3. So it's still regulated by the federal government, still would not be legal, although just about every state in the entire nation has gone down that road. There's actually only three states in the nation that have not legalized either medical or recreational in some fashion. The Kansas, where I'm based out of here in our flagship, is one of those states, which is very strange when we have Colorado and Missouri and Nebraska and Oklahoma, like all, literally all sandwiching around Kansas. And we're like, no, we're not going to do it. It's very strange. And if people believe what they want to with it, it's totally fine. I'm not making a statement one way or the other. But the bigger question is now with descheduling marijuana from a Schedule 1 to a Schedule 3 and recognizing, according to the federal government, recognizing that there's potentially some medical benefits, which there are, and then bringing it down to where it's not regulated as heavily, does that really win anybody over going into election season? Remember, I want to be very clear about this. Every single piece of news that you hear from now until November is going to be for the purpose of the election. There will be very little done in Congress. There will be very little done actually from the administrative or the executive state. Everything that's done from now on is a way to try and win voters over. The time of actually getting proper legislation done for the sake of the legislation needing to be done is over. That's done. Now that we're into election season heavily now, we have our default candidates, although they'll be concreted in and validated in June when the RNC and the DNC conventions happen. When that stuff happens, then they'll be official. But right now we're in campaign mode. So everything done. Now that the federal budget's done, we didn't get immigration done. We got foreign policy aid bills passed. All that, the fact that that's over. Now everything from this point on is campaign. For everybody, by the way. For everybody. So the Biden administration, the fact that there's really no new news here, except for the fact that this was pushed out by the DEA and recommended back in October of last year. And or no, 2022, I believe. So 2 years ago. It's been a while since they've actually advocated for this. And all of a sudden now they're like, okay, it could finally potentially happen while they still have some hurdles to take. I mean, the White House Office of Management and Budget has to recognize the medical uses of cannabis and acknowledge that it has less potential for abuse than some of the nation's most dangerous drugs. They have to make that assessment before it can actually be declassified down to a Schedule 3. So we haven't really seen any new information here than what was already out as of last fall, but yet now it's coming out in the news today. Why? Because they're on the campaign trail. They're doing a massive push. They're desperate to try and win over some support. Is that a big enough issue to win people over? I could see some, but I don't know that it necessarily is. I mean, what would it actually do? Most states, again, have already made some type of policy decision on it. So what it would actually do, which is what's been needed to be done before, and Republicans, hey, kind of get on board as, you know, Mr. and Mrs. Conservative here for limited government intrusion here, that what it would do is it would allow the states to better regulate things on their own home front without the federal government looking over their shoulder on a Schedule 1 drug like marijuana that would kind of look the other way a little bit more and allow lesser regulations from the feds and the states to do things a little bit better on their front. Who does that benefit? It benefits the states. It benefits you and I that are in the states one way or the other, regardless of how your state actually has decided on this issue. But that's honestly a conservative approach to the issue like we did on abortion. Let states figure this garbage out. And right now, the Biden administration taking a semi-conservative approach to an issue that's been discussed for a very long time to try and win over the young generation by attempting to write off their student loans and give them better access to marijuana. Is that going to be a big enough issue to drive them to the polls? They've already set the dial at 11, saying that Donald Trump's the most evil human on the face of the earth, and then we'll throw people in Guantanamo Bay if he's elected. So, I mean, when it comes to policy, I don't know that that's necessarily on that same scale or level of accomplishment. And it's nothing new. They've been working on this for a while, so why now? Well, they have nothing else. They have no other approach to take, so why not buy off the young generation, because that's who it's most prominent to.
This is The Voice of Reason with Andy Hoosier. When reason meets radio, this is The Voice of Reason with Andy Hoosier.
Yeah, darn right it is. Welcome back into the program. So great to have you along for the ride on the home stretch here for a post-Monday celebration as we continue to rock it.
Do it live!
Each and every day here. So watching the campaign trail is pretty comical, especially with the issues that they're going to bring up. I am assuming that this is going to be on the campaign for Biden here soon, talking about how great things are, along with Bidenomics and with this marijuana thing being reclassified. And then, of course, the student loan bailouts that he continues to work on. It's a wild time. And if that's what they're going to work on, then I guess cool. But they've already kind of set the tone for what this campaign is going to look like. And it's kind of a reversal of 2020, which is very strange. We had Joe Biden in the basement before, Donald Trump campaigning. and Joe Biden obviously won. Now we have Joe Biden on the campaign, trying to be on the campaign trail. Let's clarify here. Donald Trump sitting in a courtroom and trumping up massive points right now, especially in all the swing states, which is extremely comical. And of course, we have the Biden. Look, now they don't want this information out, which is why we're doing a mass push with Barack Obama, Kamala Harris, Nancy Pelosi, all these on these big, you know, conglomerate talk shows and celebrity areas, because they want that to be the focal point right now. They don't want the White House report to come out shows that they've had to correct Joe Biden in speeches 148 times since the beginning of January. So that's not good publicity for them.
We're all going to die because of you.
I know. All right, let's shift gears a little bit, shall we? Let's get into what's trending.
What's trending today?
So a lot to talk about, obviously, and the latest, I guess, big bill and the final bill that we're really going to see come out of Congress before election time was the foreign aid package that came out supporting Israel, supporting Ukraine, supporting some of the other things, the banning of TikTok with China and going after China, which is obviously very fascinating to me, and we've talked a lot about on the program. But what's really going on in Ukraine and Russia, and what's the latest as we have now sent, or at least approved to send, more firearms, more ammunition, more money over there to try and continue to push back against Russia? As when we stopped, we had Republicans say they weren't going to address the issue until they passed immigration. That obviously didn't happen. And during that time, we kept hearing in the news that Russia was making gains pushing further into Ukraine. What is the latest situation, and not just on the actual war front, but the humanitarian front as well? To talk about that and more, excited to have on the program with us here from the Ukraine Freedom Project. Happy to have on Mr. Stephen Moore. Steve, how are you, my friend?
Andy, great to be with you.
Yeah, looking forward to it. First off, talk about your guys' project. What are you working on here with the Ukraine Freedom Project, helping out some of the humanitarian efforts?
Well, you know, I grew up just down the road from you in Tulsa, Oklahoma, and that's actually where I'm talking to you from now. My mom still lives there. So back in your part of the country. And, but you know, when Russia invaded Ukraine in 2022, I was one of the first civilians in there, and I got there on day 5 of the war. And the line to get out of Ukraine was really long. The line to get into Ukraine was, pretty quick. And I was one of the few people in that line. So I started out doing humanitarian aid. And, you know, because you might be surprised to learn that some of the big organizations, international organizations that you would expect to be effective there were not effective at all. So I got a lot of medicine to the front in Kyiv when that city was under siege. We got a lot of food to Kharkiv. And at that time, it was the second largest city in Ukraine and was getting bombed a lot. It's getting bombed again. But you know, we got a lot of body armor and people, but now what I'm doing is I'm trying to get good information to people in Kansas, people in Washington, D.C., people in Oklahoma about what's really going on in Ukraine.
Yeah.
And so that's what I'm doing.
It is good. Now, again, it's been kind of a very partisan issue. It didn't start off that way. Obviously, Ukraine was an ally. And when we saw the invasion of Russia, the big concern was, of course, you know, Vladimir Putin trying to recollect and redo his Soviet Union, trying to bring back the good old boys and do what he wanted to do, which I think is still the case for the most part. I guess the bigger question on the political front is that many started to question is, where's that line drawn on how much we should be supporting this? And with Ukraine being so unstable right now, that apparently, like, if we don't support it, other nations can do it. But if we don't do it, then everything's going to fall apart. Is that true, do you think?
Yeah, well, I think what people are starting to realize is that Iran, Russia, China, and North Korea are all working together to cause chaos in Israel and Ukraine and elsewhere around the world. And so, you know, it was American weakness that the Biden administration showed in Afghanistan that emboldened Putin to go into Ukraine.
Yeah.
And so if we double down on that weakness, it's just going to get uglier for us around the world. So you know, the good news I can tell you this is I live in Kyiv. So I'm not there now, but I'm there most of the time. And you know, it's a pretty highly functioning city, which was not the case when I was there first in March of 2022. It was surrounded by Russians on three sides. And now when I go to the front, I have to drive about, you know, let's see. So farther than from Tulsa to Wichita to find a Russian. I mean, I got to drive from like Tulsa to Houston to find a Russian. It's, you know, it's about a 10-hour drive to the front. So it's gone from Kyiv being surrounded on three sides now to the front being 10 hours away by car. So Ukraine is more stable than you would think, but in the areas where the Russians are, Ukraine controls 83% of their country. In the 17% where the Russians are, the worst things in the world are happening.
Yeah. Is it true that when, Vladimir Putin did the interview with Tucker Carlson a while back, and he said this as well when he had his, if you remember the big stadium that he did, and he drew everybody in, 100,000 people, and he's talking about why God told him to do all this and why he needs to invade Ukraine to save us and to go after Nazis and all this other stuff that he's been saying. And he essentially said that he only wants those two regions that are on that border between the two nations because he's pushing back against Nazism in the area. How much of that, Stephen, do you think is actually true?
None of it. it's amazing to me that Vladimir Putin is creating, you know, like claiming some sort of mantle of Christianity. The man uses rape as a weapon of war, for starters. And just kind of getting down to some of the stuff that we know as like family values, like he has outlined a very specific pro-choice case. You know, he actually vetoed a bill last December in Russia that would have banned abortion. And he just said, we need to respect the liberties of women. And so, it is not as though that he's some great defender of Christendom. Yeah. And you mentioned the Tucker Carlson interview, and I forced myself to watch that. And, Tucker asked him twice. He said something along the lines of, do you just see a higher power working? You know, do you just see around the world? Do you seem to see a higher power working? And Putin just says, no, not really.
Wow.
So he's a KGB agent. He's trained to lie.
Yeah, well, that's very true. I mean, he does that very well. The politics in Russia is very fascinating on how he's been able to stay in power for so long. And even his adversaries, when they try to run against him, that all of a sudden wind up dead for some reason or another, just kind of shows where things are at there. But, I mean, he at the beginning, didn't he try to invoke that it was some purpose of God on why he's doing what he's doing? And he tries to claim to be this extremely religious individual.
Yeah. And that's part of what we're doing here is that this is not just a war for land and territory. This is actually, a spiritual war. The Russian Orthodox Church is not like a church like you and I would think about it. It is a working arm of the Kremlin. Mm-hmm. And the Patriarch Kirill, recently said, if you die fighting in Ukraine, all your sins will be washed away. Now, he stopped short of offering 72 virgins. But, it's that same thing that we saw from the Islamic extremists. So, and I will tell you this. I have friends who have survived Russian occupation. I've got friends who are evangelical pastors who have survived torture at the hands of the Russians. They're shutting down churches in occupied Ukraine that are not associated with the Russian Orthodox Church. And some of the worst things in the world are happening in those occupied areas.
It's a very scary thought. We're talking with Stephen Moore with Ukraine Freedom Project. You can find online at ukrainefreedomproject.org. I know this is kind of a rhetorical, silly question to ask, but obviously with all of the humanitarian things, violations that Vladimir Putin has done with his invasion, we've seen the videos, especially early on in the conflict, with the blowing up of apartment complexes and just destroying people with tanks and so on and so forth. Why in the world has there not been global repercussions, especially from the United Nations? And again, we have to laugh at that because the United Nations is kind of a useless organization in itself as well. But I get that. At the same time, with all of the massive amounts of humanitarian crises that are being broken, why are not more nations stepping up and saying this is not acceptable?
Well, and you point to the United Nations. The United Nations, they have a Human Rights Council, and some of the countries that are on that Human Rights Council that is supposed to defend human rights are human rights violators like Syria and Iran. So, you can't expect this sort of thing to come out of the UN. And Russia's on the Security Council, and they carry a pretty big stick in the UN. So, it is crazy to me because, like I said, I have a friend, Victor. Victor came up to me, first time I met him, said, hi, I'm Victor, I'm an evangelical Christian. because that is how they feel about their faith in Ukraine. Wow. If you're a Christian in Ukraine.
Yeah.
And I'm like, great, man, great to see you. And he said, and he starts telling me about being a pastor in occupied Luhansk. And he was taking a group out of Luhansk, which had a pregnant woman and a newborn infant. And the Russians took him out of his car and took him to the basement, which is a euphemism for being tortured. So they tortured him for 25 days. And one day they were torturing him with a, like one of those self-defense tasers, yeah, electrical taser. And they were torturing him with that. And a Russian Orthodox priest was standing over him, trying to cast demons out of him because he's an evangelical Christian.
Wow.
And
hold that thought, Steve.
Weird?
It's strange. Yeah. That is wild. That takes things to another level here. Hold that thought. We got to take a hard break here. Can you stick over another segment with us?
Yeah, absolutely.
Awesome. I want to continue this conversation. Fascinating stuff. It's Stephen Moore with the Ukraine Freedom Project. We'll do some more of this when we come back. Stay here on The Voice of Reason.
This is The Voice of Reason with Andy Hoosier. Fighting for freedom every day. The Voice of Reason with Andy Hoosier.
John Mart it is. Welcome back into it. Freedom, common sense, rationale. That's just what we do on this show each and every day here, especially for a post-Monday celebration. Greatest day of the entire week. It's time to carpe diem all over this place, which is what we say. I mean, we'll try at least. Do our best. Fascinating conversation as we continue on here with the Ukraine Freedom Project, ukrainefreedomproject.org. As we look at the humanitarian side of things, the religious folk in Ukraine being persecuted by Russians, by even their religious oligarchs, by essentially saying that you're born again, so therefore you apparently need demons cast out of you, which is pretty wild. Stephen Moore with the Ukraine Freedom Project on the line with us. It's sad that that's the point that we've gotten to, but it really does, like you said, reinforce the idea that the Russian religious institution isn't necessarily a religious institution, but kind of reminds me of like a monarch that we would see in England in like the 1700s.
Yeah, it is. You know, and that's the thing, is that Vladimir Putin wants to rebuild the Soviet Union, as you mentioned earlier, or the Russian Empire. And, you know, and the tools at his disposal, one of them is religion. And so he's using that to for propaganda purposes. There's conservative voices that I previously trusted that are just given really bad information about Ukraine, particularly with the situation with Christians in Ukraine. And, you know, so Marjorie Taylor Greene is one example, has said that you know, there's this whole thing that Russia is protecting Christianity and then all this. And it's just not true. Russia tortures and murders Ukrainian Christians for their faith. And we've got another website, RussiaTorturesChristians.org. And you can see firsthand experience of people who've been tortured by the Russians on video testimonies. That's RussiaTorturesChristians.org. And, you know, these are people I know. These are my friends. Yeah. And they've endured horrible things.
It's scary and it's sad to see. We hear about some of the stuff and the rumors of it that happened in, like, China. But to think about Russia doing some of this is kind of mind-blowing for sure. And I think opening a lot of people's eyes. We got a couple minutes left here, Stephen. But talk about the humanitarian side of things in Ukraine right now, this far into the conflict. Are things getting better? Are people still struggling? Are we still seeing the mass migration of people leaving the country, heading to Poland? What are we looking at right now?
Well, people are actually coming back, and one of the reasons is that American weapons in Ukrainian courage. And you know, as I mentioned earlier, you know, the Ukrainians have taken our weapons and driven the Russians hundreds of miles. And, you know, so they're now kind of, there's this conflict area between Russia and Ukraine in the southwest corner. And you know, and Russia at one point had taken nearly half of Ukraine, and now Ukrainians have pushed them back to just 17%, and of their country is controlled by Russians. And you know, so people don't understand that. People say, "Oh, Ukraine can never win." Well, Ukraine has been winning, and it's just not a message that makes it over here. And you know, in terms of humanitarian, the most of the country is stable. There's a lot of internally displaced people, and those people are having a tough time. And if you live near the front, then, you know, it is really rough. We've helped a bunch of people who just recently, well, it's been a year now, but they were liberated from the Russians. And the children there have amazing stories of bravery, of tanks shooting outside their window. Or one little girl talks about their house being shelled, and her grandmother and grandpa were covered in blood. And and another brave little kid talks about how they found the Russian ammo depot and gave that information to Ukrainian soldiers, and they blew it up. So the story of the courage, and even among the children, is just really, really inspirational.
Yeah. Do you think, and we got about a minute here before we have to wrap up, so we have to keep it short, but do you think that it's that courage that's keeping them going? I mean, we heard the number that, 450,000 Russian soldiers have been killed in this conflict from a nation that has a very, very small military compared to what we thought was one of the top three strongest militaries on the face of the earth with Russia. How in the world have they been able to fight the way that they are right now, do you think? In about 40 seconds.
Oh, yeah, the Ukrainians are fighting for their freedom. It's that simple. You know, the Ukrainians are people like us. They're Christians, they're entrepreneurial, they're hardworking, and they love freedom, and they are willing to die for it. And, you know, they're not going to stop fighting until the Russians leave their country, because no one wants to live under that kind of horrific Russian occupation. And, you know, this is a Christian country. There's 80% of Ukrainians identify as Christian. And they want to be able to worship as they please. And the Russians just aren't going to let them do that. So they'll fight for it.
Fighting for their homeland. I love it. UkraineFreedomProject.org is the website. Go and check them out. Stephen, great stuff, my friend. Keep up this fight. Keep letting people know what's going on. Let's get you back on the show again real soon, my friend.
Would love that. Thanks for your time.
Absolutely. Great stuff. We'll do it again here soon. Until then, back at it again tomorrow for the midweek celebration. Be your own voice of reason. Be that catalyst for change in your own community. This is the Voice of Reason. I'm Andy Hoosier. We'll see you on the radio. Bye.